This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 375. The employees got a Bioshock of their very own. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl, gaming, tech, gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Panda!
Hi!
How you doing?
I'm okay.
I mean you're okay.
I guess I'm okay.
How do you guess that you're okay? You're you. You either know that you're okay or you know that you're not okay.
Well, if I had to sit here and guesstimate how I'm feeling
today... Why are you guesstimating your feelings? I don't understand. You are you. You should know you.
Because...
Don't you know you?
Sometimes I feel like I don't.
You know, they make pills for that.
Yep, it's called Ativan.
Among many others.
Zoloft and Fuck It All.
Oh, I like Fuck It All. That's one of my favorite ones.
I like the one that makes me think that people disintegrate in red and yellow Legos. I think that's Dilaudid.
I'm pretty sure that...
That shit is intense.
Drugs are bad, okay?
Drugs, don't do them unless a doctor tells you you're allowed.
Even if a doctor tells you that you're allowed, sometimes maybe you shouldn't do them. Like, you...
Use that pain scale. If you're under 5, don't take it.
Don't do it.
If you're like 7 or 8, cut it in half.
Maybe don't do it.
No, if you're at a 7 or 8, you should probably cut a pill in half. But if you're like at 9, 10, then like...
You should be in the hospital.
You should take one and take a nap.
Would be in the hospital. I mean, pick it.
I mean,
if your pain's at a 9, like, you should not be.
I mean, if you are that red, agonized face,
if you're
then
the face that looks like you really
you're constipated and you're bleeding from the constipation.
We're so related. I was like,
they go
get in there and you beat me to it. Yeah, it's gonna be that kind of show, people. Because Panda's using big words over there in the corner.
And I'm using them inappropriately today.
And I am drinking because I finally started feeling better. I don't have any more diseases of...
I don't know why you didn't just drink alcohol to get rid of it.
No.
When I get really sick, I drink bourbon and tea until I pass out. And then when I wake up, I'm all better.
Panda, I love hot toddies.
I love hot toddies.
Hot toddies for the body are awesome. But... It's wrong thinking to think that if you're not feeling well, that just downing some alcohol is going to make you feel better. Sure, you'll feel warm.
You'll feel warm and cuddled and appreciated until you pass out.
But the alcohol is not going to kill any germs or bacteria in your body.
But alcohol kills germs. That's what it says on the alcohol bottle.
But not when it's being digested in your system.
It cleans your insides.
No, your liver will be happier with you if it doesn't have to do overtime.
Well, that's its job. It has one job, liver.
Yes, but not overtime. You do not pay it for overtime. It is not part of the union. Okay? So you don't get to tax it overtime. If you do, that's when you get cirrhosis and you're fucked. So back up off it when you're sick, people. But now I'm better. So now I'm drinking. So it's going to be a regular ESH podcast where we talk about video games and anime.
Yes. And stuff.
And stuff. Which is awesome. I miss drinking.
Hey, we're ESH and we're here to talk to you about video games, animes, and stuff.
Yeah, but we have some serious stuff to talk about this week. So
do we really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yes.
That thing. Yeah.
Yes.
So Ninja lost one of her boobs this week.
I didn't. Will you stop with the bullshit?
I'm just kidding. They're both still there.
Thanks.
Prevalent.
Well, I don't know why we
poignant.
Have to talk about my boobs every other podcast.
Because they just don't leave me alone.
I don't know why you're fixated on them, but you really need to work on that.
Because they're so big.
Stop it. They're not that big.
Shut the fuck up.
All right. So anyway, the serious stuff that we have to talk about. Can we get to the serious stuff?
Yes.
Thank you. So first up on my list of things to talk about.
That's serious?
That is serious.
Okay.
The news about Irrational Games this week.
Well, that's both of our lists, so it's not just your list, it's our list.
Well, I'm talking first, so right now we're dealing with my list. It's great that it's on your list.
It's
too.
On our communal list of important things.
We don't have
things.
A communal list. I have a list right in front of me. Do you have a list right in front of you?
In my brain.
Yeah, well, guess what? Your brain doesn't count. So anyway, as I was saying.
It does too. All right, one, I take
that
two, back.
That
three.
Was mean. That was mean. Your brain counts, but not right now. So.
Thanks, bro.
Hey, love you, bro. If you're not aware, Irrational Games is winding down. Ken Levine put out a statement earlier this week to explain what's happening at Irrational Games, or with what we know as Irrational Games, and what the future looks like for the team that will remain. And by winding down, I mean, I think Irrational's team before this week was somewhere in the neighborhood of just shy of like 130 to 140 people. With the news of Burial at Sea 2 dropping on March 25th, Ken announced that Irrational is basically done.
Yep.
Out of business.
All done.
Right, and he is going to reform with a few key people from the Irrational team to create a smaller dev to focus
on digital.
Digital first, specifically
content,
because that's where his passion and heart lie right now. And the letter, I'm not going to read it. It's a very thoughtful letter, and that's one thing that you can always say about Ken Levine
is that he's not a douche.
No, he's very thoughtful and very methodic in how he approaches things. So. It did surprise me because it felt like it came out of nowhere.
Well, literally, because I was like, hey, Ninja, guess what happened today? And you were like, what? And I said, this. And you were like, what? And I said, yeah.
And then I said, no. And you said,
yeah.
Yeah. But for me, you know, it's a bittersweet thing. And mostly bitter before I can process all the way through it to get to sweet. Because I'll be honest with you, when I first read the news that Irrational was closing down, my heart sank because, one, they're a local team. You know, they're based out in Quincy, which isn't very far from us.
It's a good drive.
It's not that far.
It's a like good, it's a good 45 drive. 45 minute, you mean? Not 45 hour.
Yeah, 45 to an hour.
You said 45 hour.
Yeah,
you didn't say
45 hour. 45 to an hour.
No, you have to say 45 to, you can't say 45 hour, because then I think 45 hours, what? Someone just doesn't understand the concept of plurals.
Someone doesn't understand how to talk drive in Massachusetts.
I know how to drive in Massachusetts.
I said talk drive in Massachusetts.
No, I don't talk drive. I just get
you
in
say,
my car
oh,
and go.
It's going to take me like 25, 30.
I would never say that. That's not
that's
how
why
you
I said
say it.
You don't know how to talk driver. So anyway, the first piece of the announcement that surprised me was, you know, we're losing one of our own big dev houses, because Irrational is well known in the industry, and it's always nice when we have a local dev house that's really been very successful in the industry that, you know, we have a really good relationship with. We love the Irrational team. They've always been very supportive of all the stuff that we've done and the coverage that we've done of various Irrational titles and projects. But the second piece to me that was very surprising was to think, well, what's going to happen to BioShock? Because that is such a phenomenal franchise. BioShock is not over. One of the things that Ken said in his letter is that it will continue on under Take-Two, which Take-Two has been the parent of Irrational Games since, geez, I want to say for the last decade. Might be a little bit longer than that. Probably should have done more digging in that. But Irrational's been around for 17 years, almost two decades. And it was both comforting to me to know that BioShock isn't done, because I do think that it's one of the hallmark franchises of 64-bit and better gaming ever. I think the storytelling is amazing, the characters that have been created. You know, to this day, I see artwork of Big Daddies and Booker and Elizabeth, and Big Daddies still scare the bejesus out of me if it's dark. You know, just how bombastic they were, and the stories that they were laid into, both the city of Rapture and the city of Columbia were so full of depth and richness and just great storytelling, both visually as far as how they were presented, but also the characters that filled out that space. You know, I think Columbia is probably more scary of an environment than Rapture was to me, not because it was dark, but because there were so many menacing things coming at you, clear as day in the light and in the sky, and that element of, you know, possibly falling and the warped morality was so much more tangible. And it really made me sad to think that that mantle and that branch of storytelling was not going to be continued, because it was so unique and it's so valuable, I think, to the current video game space. And so to know that Take-Two is going to continue on with it and run with it, on one hand made me feel great, and on the other hand terrified me, because it's not going to be the irrational team that's been working on BioShock and BioShock 2.
Well, I mean, this, that'll be working this will not on this be next. The first time that we have seen BioShock out of the hands of Irrational Games, because Ken was not involved, and a good chunk of his team was not actually involved in BioShock 2. And obviously, that game, in comparison to BioShock 1 and BioShock Infinite, did poorly in terms of what their goals were.
Yep.
Financially. So we've seen what BioShock looks like away from the hands of its initial creators. So,
and
I mean,
it wasn't good. Like, 2, I did not...
It wasn't great. It was not a sucky game, but it was not BioShock the way...
I wasn't drawn to finish it. I was drawn to finish the first game. I wasn't drawn to finish the second game. And I...
You finished the fuck out of Infinite.
I finished the ever-loving Jesus out of Infinite. I played Infinite twice. All the way through.
I mean, we know from the letter that it sounds like Ken really wants to take a direction where he gets to be more involved in narratives. He wants to do more things narratively in the game world, which I think from, if you go back to looking at Infinite's story, you could see how rich and developed and thought out and methodical it was.
It absolutely makes sense. And, you know, with the advent of tablet gaming and mobile gaming, and you take a look at some of the independent games that have been doing very well, that, you know, have been given some amazing time in the spotlight, it makes sense. You know, games like Braid and Limbo, I mean, there are just so
many. Gone Home, The Unfinished Swan.
Don't Starve. You know, there are.
Yeah, Don't Starve. That's a good life rule.
The game.
Oh. Well, it's a good game and a good life lesson.
I'm just saying that there are so many great narratives out there that it does make sense to me that Ken would want to be a part of that. He comes off as a great storyteller, and that, you know, it's just this environment that BioShock lives in and on the console, where he gets to tell that story using amazing visuals and things like that, but really getting more out of the performances and being more narrative. And I think, you know, with the successes of games like Walking Dead and, you know, Wolf Among Us, that are very much more about the narrative and the storytelling than necessarily the action and button mashing, if your passion lies in telling those stories, now is a perfect time to
switch those gears. To venture off into that genre shift, absolutely.
You know, so to me, I applaud Ken for being able to walk away from a very successful franchise and a very large team that's been very successful for, you know, almost 2 decades, to do something that is being led by his passion to do. So, those 120 people, what's up with them? What's their severance packages going to look like? How long are they going to be out of a job? You know, we've been losing more dev houses of late than we've been building, especially on the big guy front as opposed to the indie side. So, what does that mean for everyone? And I think one of the best proactive steps that I've seen any company make when making an announcement like this, they're having a hiring fair. And they've invited any and every third-party game developer to come to an in-house to basically scope out and poach, before they shut their doors, their talent that they're not taking with them to this smaller team. And I thought, well, that's at least a nice thing to do. And I don't mean, you know, just a couple of people from Fire Access or something like that. Every single dev house is sending a team to meet with and probably hire a big chunk, if not all, of the displaced irrational peeps. And there are some people with amazing portfolios. Ken's been pimping them out on his social channels ever since making the announcement, sharing various people's portfolios, talking about what they worked on BioShock or other projects, and why he loved working with them or what they bring to the table. So it's not a, all right, well, I got mine, you got yours, good luck, everybody, kind of approach. And I do have to say that I gave some more respect back to Ken and to the Irrational team for doing that. And there, what's really cool is that the indie people in town have also come to the mat. A couple of the different indie developers have offered up office space for people to come and work out of and do interviews with, and to even look at people's portfolios and offer some recommendations for updates and things like that. So again, it's another proof point for me for just how amazing the video game community is, in that so many dev houses from across the country and quite a few from across the pond are coming to Boston, so much so that they're no longer able to hold the open house at Irrational's headquarters. They've had to take over some like ballroom space so they can accommodate everybody coming in and everything that they're showing off, which is cool. And then you've got the indies supporting. So I'm hopeful that, you know, the people who are right now looking at without being a job are going to get snapped up and bring some amazing creativity and interesting ideas to additional companies, and maybe some new refreshes and new eyes on some existing franchises, which will be great. So I'm hopeful that it will end up positive, but I think it's really interesting that so many people right now are talking about making the shift to doing more narrative games and are looking to do things off disc, to do as much digital as possible. You know, DLC reigns supreme, and people seem to have finally accepted microtransaction without bitching about it, because it's not, you know, 99 cents every 3 minutes like the fears were when it was first revealed as a possible ecosystem in gaming. But so many devs are looking at how they can go digital. I think the success of on-demand download with the advent of internet connections getting faster and being more reliable has made it much more attractive, because it reduces your overhead. If you're not having to press discs, you can go gold master at a moment's notice as opposed to months' notice.
You're right. No point of contention there. It makes absolute sense why that direction is looked to as a much better way of distribution.
Yeah, that word. And I'm the one who's drinking. Just saying.
I stumble sometimes, but I keep picking myself up.
And that's the important piece. But, you know, in an age where it's so much easier to self-publish now, before, if you were making a game, you had to get a distributor. And now you can do it yourself.
Yep. SDKs. All you have to do is stab yourself in the heart repeatedly and bleed everything you have out onto your medium.
I was going to say, get an SDK and develop for a mobile or digital platform and sell through a marketplace like the iOS marketplace or Steam? The Android marketplace or Steam or direct sell.
Yeah, you can do that
from
too.
From a website. You know, so less blood involved.
Oh, no, blood is still involved. It's just not on your copy of whatever you're getting, because it's digital and it's bloodless.
But I'm curious to see if there is more of a push in the next, you know, 6 months to go disc-free, download digital only.
But, you know, in order to do that, I think effectively, that would cause the consumers to have to go out of their way now and get places to store these downloads, because not all hardware comes equipped with enough space to carry all the games.
And that's the thing, is that, you know, you can't have all the games. I mean, look at what's going on with the Xbox One right now. Right now...
What's going on with the Xbox One right now? Because I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, right now you have storage, and you have one drive size for Xbox One, as far as internal hardware space. And then you have a limited amount of cloud space available for saves for games, but not necessarily for downloads and holds of games. Digital Now is one of their big things as far as being able to download it now and play immediately across all the next-gen consoles. Everybody wants to be able to download now and faster. But these games are quite substantial, you know?
I mean, the other night, I went and got the downloadable content for Last of Us, the Left Behind.
Yes.
And literally, I had to delete, like, almost all of my, like, PSN games. Like, I had to get rid of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shell-Shocked, but that was a horrible game, so I don't feel that bad. But I had to pretty much get rid of Fat Princess and all these other things outside of Journey
now
and Flow to make space for that, because that DLC packet was huge.
Now, that being said, you don't have a boom fatty hard drive in your PS.
Nope,
you have a Slim, right?
Yes, it's a Slim.
Which you, I can't remember. Can you upgrade the hard drive in a Slim?
I don't know, and I wouldn't have the prowess to do it.
See, because I have my fatty, and I modded it. I put a, well, not mod, I upgraded the hard drive. You could do it. It's one of the
I'm not
things.
That smart.
It's not that difficult, and I did a video about it.
Do I use a screwdriver?
Just kidding, guys. I'm not that dumb.
Okay.
And I put, at the time, a 500 gig, 7200 RPM...
Holy fuck.
...drive in it.
That sounds big.
Because I knew I was going to have my fatty for quite a while.
And then you did it.
I do. I still have it. It's just in my cellar right now. Because there's not a lot of driving PS3 games. And frankly, I'm waiting for the Order 1866...
That's when I'm going to get my PS4 is when that game comes out.
And, like, some money. And when those two things happen, I'll probably get a PS4 at that point. Because I know at some point down the road, a God of War game on the PS4 is coming.
I don't know what else they could possibly do.
I'm going to want to play it.
They already went back. Maybe now they'll do Kratos in the future?
Well, there are still a bunch of other demigods that he hasn't killed yet.
Well, I mean, now you can go into Morse...
And
Norse mythology and go kick Odin's ass.
Well, they're the same kind of sort of gods. But you have all these demigods
He can go to Japan and go kill their gods.
And if, you know,
God of Death,
Kratos' vow to wipe out the Olympians is true, and, you know, he
then we should send his ass to Sochi.
He...
Ba-da-ba-ba.
Topical!
Wow.
Okay, so anyway... A God of War game will happen. There'll be other IPs, I'm sure, that will look good. I can't imagine that there won't be some kind of Bayonetta game for...
Eventually coming
for
away
the PlayStation
from,
4.
Possibly. I mean, we already know that Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be an exclusive for PS4.
And I'm going to want to be all over that. So they're going to have games that I'm going to want.
They just don't have them right now.
And so I get to keep that $400 in my pocket. It will eventually get spent. Sony will eventually get my money.
Take it! Take my money!
But that being said, there are so many games right now that are attractive that are away from console, especially with the next-gen consoles still beefing up their rollout of truly amazing games for their platforms.
Well, it's still in its first year of whether it's going to have flops or bugs or issues. This would be the time for us
to find
out.
Well, I mean, look at how many times Watch Dogs been pushed back.
Yep.
Okay? Which was originally supposed to be a launch title.
Yep, and it's not coming out until what?
March?
Maybe. If it doesn't get pushed back anymore?
The question mark. You know.
That's the thickest of question marks.
So for me, right now, the game industry, and as a gamer, the landscape is very interesting because mobile is very attractive. And some of the games that I'm really enjoying playing right now are not traditional, you know, action platformer, all up in there, scare you to pieces games. Like, I'm getting ready to jump on Strider for the Xbox One, because it reminds me of playing old school 2D scrollers, even though it's this amazing experience for a next gen console. But that nostalgia piece that it chimes in and it strikes that chord with, I think is going to be very strong. So I think it's kind of a interesting time in gaming where you now have one of the guys who has really been at the forefront of some of the best gaming, at least I can speak on a personal level, that I've done in the last 10 years. You know, as far as like best games that I've played in the last 10 years, BioShock Infinite is right up there, close to the top of the list, with Mass Effect and, you know, to a degree, the God of War trilogy all put together as a storytelling experience. But Last of Us for sure, and Uncharted to a degree, and the last Tomb Raider game, some of the most fantastic gameplay elements, story elements, environments that I've been involved with.
But see, it's very interesting that you bring up, like, The Last of Us and Tomb Raider as games that you've put in the top part of your gaming experience in the last decade.
Absolutely.
Because we know that Tomb Raider out of Square Enix and also, obviously, BioShock Infinite were kind of seen as financial flops because of their projected goals. So, I mean, I think for someone who wants to go into the industry and really want to focus on the narrative side of things is going to be looking at a totally different industry scape than if, you know, say coming from a AAA title house who can just sit there and make, oh, I don't know, Rockstar money
for doing what Rockstar does. There are a lot of games that miss their projected goals. And I don't like projected goals, and I'm sure most companies
don't. Because it puts a lot
of
pressure on the dev houses to perform at a rate that they can't necessarily foresee.
Correct. You can't guess what the market's going to do, okay? You can create an amazing game. And if you don't have the right marketing dollars, and you're not advertising in front of the right people, and you're not getting your game in the hands of right people to...
Quantic Dream, looking at you.
To basically be advocates for your game and get it out there and drive positive word of mouth to get more people who wouldn't know about your game to buy it, it becomes this behemoth that you can't serve. Okay? If you've got to make $100 million to break even...
Well, then, fuck.
That's a hellified number to have to hit.
That is one really bad payment
plan. Selling games at $70 a pop. You know, if you're not making $1 billion in 3 days, you're not a success. That's a heavy line to have to toe. And I don't think that that would add to the creative environment. I think that it would take away from it. And
we've seen that in the movie industry, too. So,
you know, so
not a good equation.
I think that, you know, trying to create a smaller dev to focus on narrative, to really craft something that you're passionate about that doesn't have to make $1 billion in 3 days in order to be successful and to ensure that you'll be able to do a sequel to the game, it's probably much more interesting and enticing to do than to be taxed with, okay, so what are you doing for BioShock 3? Technically. After Infinite, because I don't know that after, you know, dropping the mic with Infinite and the two burials at sea, that I've got anything else in me in that.
Because you can't necessarily do a prequel, because with Infinite you could have gone just about anywhere because of all the options.
And so you don't want to just beat the dead horse into glue by saying, oh, well, the next Infinite, we're going to go down one of those alternate, you know, paths.
Right.
That's too much of an easy out. So, you know, I think that...
I mean, there could be an interesting thing.
But
there.
I don't like it when it feels forced.
Right.
Okay? You know, that was my trepidation when the Assassins started coming one every year, right?
Yep.
That we were going to end up with one that felt forced. And thankfully, Brotherhood didn't feel forced.
What about Liberation, the iOS?
I didn't play Liberation.
Which
Liberation
I feel bad
was on the Vita.
Yeah, and I think that they also made an iOS port.
And they just released it as an independent piece.
I feel bad for the Liberation because you had your protagonist who was a females.
Yeah, but you're going to be able to play Liberation as a separate standalone download now. You can get it, I think you can get it on the PS4 now as a separate game through PSN. And I think it's going to become available on Xbox One, just like Freedom Cry, which was originally DLC that was part of Black Flag, is now a standalone DLC. So you can get it and play it, that little mission, a couple of missions, by itself. But for me, you know, I didn't feel that it was forced. And then when Revelation came, and I think you can go back to the podcast, I was excited about Revelation, but I was terrified that it was just going to feel like Brotherhood Plus. And it didn't. But there's, for every one of those where it doesn't happen,
there's a game out there that it does.
There's 10 where it does. And it's like, holy crap.
Like Cooking Mama 10 in particular. Like,
well, there are some people that feel like, you know, anytime they pick up a Call of Duty game, it's Call of Duty.
Well,
there's nothing wrong with that. Call of Duty is good. Call of Duty is good. And if you love Call of Duty, more Call of Duty is not a bad thing.
Duty.
Okay.
Duty.
You know, just like for me, when I jumped into the Titanfall beta, okay, I've played games before where I've piloted giant robots that had rockets and guns.
Zone of Enders much.
Okay. But Zone of Enders is a completely different feel than Titanfall.
How about Hawken?
Titanfall is a completely different feel than Hawken. And I love each of those for different reasons, because their gameplay not only is different, but their stories and the way that you get immersed into them is a completely different thing. And when I played Titanfall, at no point did I ever feel like I was playing Call of Duty, Halo, or Killzone. It felt different than all of those games. So I think it has a bright future. But I think, you know, where we're at right now is we're at this very interesting crossroads where we've got mobile gaming and casual gaming lines blurring.
Blurred lines!
You know, a game that I would think and I would put in a category of being a casual game is now picking up a dense following. It's being ported over to PC because of Steam. We've got Steam boxes that are getting ready to roll. So there's going to be a new platform where a whole lot of people can bring digital download without having to have a disc press gameplay. And I think that it's very interesting that right as Steam boxes are getting ready to roll out, that Ken is taking a small group of his team to start on this digital path. And I think that you're going to see more of it. I think that you're going to see more devs and former devs stepping up and coming down this line. And I think it's really interesting. Like, you know, Cliff Bleszinski.
Cliffy B.
Walked away from games. Was like, yeah, I'm done doing my thing. But I have to think that the idea of all digital, no disc, no bullshit, create your own entity and be beholden to no one but yourself is pretty damn attractive.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. It's like cornbread.
You know, Double Fine is making a game because they got kickstarted.
Yep.
So the only people they are beholden to are the people who purchased their game.
People who backed them.
There's something freeing in that, I think, for a dev. And I think we're going to see more of it.
I hope so.
You know, the kickstarting category for video games just blew up after the Double Fine Kickstarter went off. And, you know, there are some studies that show that not a lot of the games that are actually kickstarted make it to market, but the ones that do are fantastic. You know, look how excited we were when Bastion hit the console.
Oh, Bastion was beautiful.
And everyone was like, where did this thing come from? And it's amazing. So, you know, it's one of those things. I'm terrified for BioShock, but I'm also excited for what BioShock may be moving forward. I can't wait to see what the hell Ken Levine's coming up with. Well, because the man puts together fantastic stories.
And if he really, and now he'll be able to fully focus on the narrative that he wants to create.
And if he's fully focusing on narrative, like, I can't imagine that that's not going to be amazing. My hope is that the team that's displaced is able to find some good jobs with some
stable work.
Good dev homes. You know, and there's a lot that are coming to town, so I'm hopeful that everyone will end up with a job.
And I hope they get to bring their special magic to whatever dev house they land in or whatever projects they get involved in.
I think it's interesting that Ken's new little venture is staying in the Take-Two house. I'm not exactly sure how that works, if it's staying Take Two EA or just Take Two, which is EA.
We'll find out when it finally fully establishes itself.
How that all comes together and things like that, but I'm really excited about this digital frontier because I've spent more time, I think, buying digital games. I've gone back and forth on whether or not to get the definitive version of Tomb Raider for the Xbox One, and ultimately,
I don't think you'll play through it all again.
Ultimately, I ended up saying no because I've already beat the game. and in all honesty, they didn't add anything new. It's just beefed up graphics.
It's just really, really pretty now, as opposed to just really pretty.
And, you know, if there are no changes to the story or gameplay elements, I kind of have a hard time shelling out $60 and giving up.
Like, it's so pretty, you'll want to take it on 4 dates instead of 2.
I don't have the wherewithal to shell out $60 and give up 20 gigs plus of space on my hard drive to do
it. For a pouty or Lara.
For a hard drive that I can't upgrade right now. Because getting back to your point, you know, if you're moving on this digital frontier, you have to have some place to store your games. And physical storage inbox can only go so far. I have a feeling that the next round and gen of consoles is not going to have a hard disk. It's either going to have a big chunk of flash storage, or it's all going to be cloud-based so that the boxes can be smaller.
And ooh, PS4 Slims. Xbox One Slims. Ayo.
I don't know if they're going to rev the existing lines or if they'll just call them new lines.
I don't see the point of making them new if they're just smaller.
It depends. If they move to solid state storage, that's a completely different architecture. So it's a different box. If they move to cloud storage, not so much.
Well, we won't know till it happens.
But I think that, you know, you're more likely to go to solid state, which is still a little expensive, than the cloud.
Did you say solid snake?
No.
I know you didn't. Sorry.
Steak. But to me, cloud storage, I think, financially makes the wisest choice. But just from all the security holes, and frankly, with Net neutrality being fucked again, not being able to rely on getting the best bandwidth at all times from your provider without being throttled or just nickeled and dimed to death to get it, I don't trust it, and I don't want cloud storage. So it'll be interesting to see how the landscapes change. That's my serious thing for the show. Panda, what do you got?
Well, since I kind of horned in on your seriousness.
You think?
And you kind of said everything that I was going to say about that. So I'm going to move to, I guess it's still kind of serious, but I'm moving into the anime phase of the show now.
Ooh,
A little anime. Bit, because I haven't played anything new since The Wolf Among Us episode 2, and my review will be available for that by Wednesday this week. So keep your eye out for that.
Yeah,
So I don't want to talk about that on the show. But in terms of anime, I have been watching this series, and I had posed a question on our Facebook page earlier in the week, last week, about the emergence of anime series that episodes are more like vignettes and not even at a 5-minute mark.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this with Diabolic Lovers. Nearly makes me want to throw up every time I say the name to that series. And we knew that the reason for that shortening episode was because of all the rapes.
Yeah, that they cut out.
That they had to cut out because it was explicit and bad. And just bad. Just and, all the time, rape, bad.
Yep.
So the series I'm talking about this week is called Pupa.
Yes.
Which I had seen the little thumbnail for it on the Crunchyrolls.
Yeah.
And it looked interesting in terms of its animation style, which is actually more manga-esque when you look at it, because it was initially a manga series.
And I'm finding that one of the things that's happening is that many of the manga series are the ones that are first tapped for these shortened or hyper-shortened anime series that have popped up in the last 2 seasons.
Yeah. And the
mostly light novels too.
Yeah, well this was a manga series, and it got its initial run back in 2011, and it only has 5 volumes, and it's technically considered a shonen, which I have not had a chance to try to find if I can, like, find a place
and
online.
And what does shonen mean for the uninitiated?
All right, so you've got 2 main, and I'm using air quotes for that, categories of mangas. Shoujo, which usually tends to appeal to a female audience. You know, like, pretty senshi, you know, cutesy, slice
strong
of life.
Strong princess, supergirl power.
Yeah.
Type. Yep.
Light, airy, cute, like angelic layer, but you read it.
Right.
And shonen is more like your fairy tale, your One Piece, your,
So your shonens for boys and your shoujos for girls.
For girls. And then when you get into shoujo eye or shonen eye, well, that's just, we're blurring lines there. But we're not going to get into that because I've done
that. Is that the naughty stuff?
That's the stuff that's like, ooh, strong female relationships that could potentially mean that they're lesbies or we're dudes who have boy love.
So is that like, so that's the step before it's a hentai?
Mm-hmm. Before it gets ecchi, because it really goes shonen eye, ecchi, hentai. In severity. So Shonen's eye, like, we're boys and we think we kind of like each other. We're going to explore this. And Echi's like, I totally thought about him in his boxer shorts. And Hentai's like, hey, look, a pixelated penis.
Right. Okay. So now I'm following.
That's the best correlation that I can surmise.
So it's like we're best friends to, hey, I saw you in your underwear and that was kind of cute, to, hey.
And now I'm questioning my sexuality. And the Hentai's like, I'm gay and I want your cock in my face.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. Think of that correlation if that helps.
No, it doesn't really help.
Oh, well, it helps me.
I mean, I understand it. It just doesn't help.
So,
not good.
So, right. But Pupa is considered a shonen. And,
okay. So,
I mean,
it's like clean. It's meant clean. It's super clean.
No.
Wait.
No.
You just explained.
I know. It's lying. It's lying. Because from the anime series, like I said, they're taking this from a shonen perspective. So this series is meant to appeal to boys.
Uh-huh.
Boys, boys, boys.
Boys, boys, boys.
Boys everywhere. So essentially the story, from what I can surmise from the 8 episodes that are present, mind you, each episode is under 5 minutes. I think the longest I've seen is like a 4-minute episode, which I was like,
damn.
What's this extra 60 seconds for? What?
What are they doing? Is this a bonus episode?
I thought so.
Was this a season ender?
Also, I've seen in this season on Crunchyroll that we're seeing a whole lot of series that are looking at relationships between brothers and sisters. I've seen a lot
is this
of that.
Another brother sister one?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, the main protagonists.
Oh, is this incestuous?
No, I don't think so. Let me get to this. Let me get to the synopsis.
You make me nervous when you say. I'll get to it.
So the premise of the story is you have this brother and sister pair, Utsuru and his sister Yume.
Uh-huh.
And they come from a really, really dysfunctional, abusive home. Their father, and I'm questioning if they're really, but whatever. Their father likes to not only, you know, hit their mother, who's at this point kind of gone nuts. And when she decides to run off to, you know, bang younger men, he turns all of his abuse onto the children. And in the
so
first,
the mom leaves her kids with an abusive husband.
And mommy and daddy divorce.
It's a bang.
So literally, mommy and daddy together, they have kids. Abuse, abuse, abuse. Mommy says, fuck this. They divorce. Mommy goes off to bang younger people. Father sticks around with the kids a little bit longer, abuses the fuck out of them. And then he leaves to go do his thing, and now it's just Utsuru and Yume. And Utsuru, being the older brother, is that whole care and compassion. I'm going to take care of my sister, you know, because I love her and we're family and we're all we have in the world. So you get that nice, warm, comforting impression.
I already don't like this.
It's actually eerily unsettling, and the opening song is just as disturbing, and I love it because the imagery that they show really lets you know that, yeah, these two seem really super cute, but there's something ominous and dissettling between each still shot, because they're all stills, it's not animated. And they're really just showing you a reel of the characters, and you can tell by the backdrops whether or not it's innocent or not. And but one night, Utsuru and Yume are, like, out in Tokyo, and apparently this really scary, witchy-looking chick named Maria bumps into Yume, and she's like, you need to get off the street before the red butterflies come. And Yume's like, what are you talking about? I'm waiting for my brother Utsuru. And, you know, she's like, well, I'm going to go now. And she, like, disappears. And as she's walking home, or to their meeting place, she comes across these red butterflies. And usually red is not a good color.
Yeah, typically it's and eerily,
sometimes they like to use butterflies as an odd metaphor for something ominous. Like they did it in Umineko with golden butterflies. There was something symbolic about these eerie-looking flies.
Well, they did it in We Without Wings, too.
Yeah. So, needless to say, red butterflies is a really, really bad thing. You don't want to come across one of them. And sadly,
also, black butterflies in Magi.
But anyway, so Yumi comes across these red butterflies and one lands on her and then all of a sudden she like falls to the ground and it literally like gets into her belly.
And ew.
Yeah. And it begins to grow a monster in her.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. And her brother comes to find like her body like on this ground. He's like, Yumi, what happened? And there's this chick walking by like, I didn't see anything. I just saw her laying there and didn't do anything because, you know, that's what we do in Tokyo if someone doesn't tell us what to do. And Utsuru's like, wake up, Yumi. And as, you know, she starts to, like, wake up, her stomach totally does that bursty alien thing.
Aww.
And, like, her whole body kind of like a cocoon, like, blows up. And there's this ugly, disgusting oni monster kind of standing there and it kind of devours the lady who happened to be, like, just standing there. And,
Well, she was a douche. She had it coming.
Well, yeah, she was just standing there, so she totally had death coming. And, you know, Utsuru's like, what the fuck has happened? And the scary chick, Maria, shows up, and she's like, so, you guys are kind of infected with this disease called pupa. And usually most people who succumb to this virus house a monster, very much like that one. And it will now search for anything living to devour. And that's all it does. It has no rationale. It's not who it used to be. And there's no point in trying to cure it because there's no cure for pupa right now. And Yuya's like, well, it's my sister. I can appeal to her. I can appeal to her. And Maria's like, go right ahead. See if you can. And literally he goes up to this monster and he's begging and he's pleading. And internally you see the essence of Yume still inside this monster. And inside, she's like, oh, yes, I'll totally stop. I don't know why'd I kill these people. And as she's having this monologue with herself, when it comes back out of her perspective, you see the monster is eating Utsuru. And she has no control over what has just happened. However, it seems, the way that this series is panning out, that Utsuru, also infected with this pupa virus, has the ability to regenerate limbs. And
what?
Yeah. So he can't die. You seem to manifest either this demon ability that you can't control at all, or you will exude some other ability type things.
So he remembers being him, and he doesn't.
He remembers being him, and
is immortal,
and is essentially immortal. Yume, after devouring her brother, who has this ability, is able to revert back to being human. However, she can't control when she's going to turn
become
into it.
The monster thingy that devours everything.
That will devour anything and everything living. Yep. So when Utsuru manages to come back too, and he, you know, has his body again, Maria's like, yeah, see, I was trying to tell you guys that this stuff was going to happen, you know, so we can either kill your sister now, you know, before she reverts back into this monster, or you can let me do some science on you. And of course, Utsuru's like, well, I want to protect my sister, she's all I have, and blah, blah, blah. So Maria injects this medicine type thing into his body and pretty much makes him agree to be Yume's feeding supply to see if this medicine that she's injected into him will somehow conquer the pupa virus that's in Yume.
So he agrees to let his sister eat him all the time.
To devour him. And there have been several episodes where it gets cut. It seems really incestuous because literally once she becomes hungry, the hunger consumes her. And, you know, there's an episode for 4 minutes where literally he's on a bed and she's just like, I'm so hungry. And he's like, you know what you have to do. And you literally see her devour his stomach. And they have to blur it out a little bit, but literally as she's eating, like, she looks horrified, horror-stricken, because he dies every time that she does it, but he just comes back. But, like, she's doing it in her human form, and she's, like, inside, she's like, no, I don't want to do this, and you just see her ripping out intestines, you know, and he is just suffering with each agonizing bite, and it is intense.
It is disgusting.
It is intense as fuck.
I've not seen this, and everything you just described made me kind of throw up a little bit in my mouth. Oh, I haven't even told you the sickest
part yet.
No, you did. You did.
No, no, I didn't. So Maria, who, like I said, is kind of batshit fucking nuts and will do just about anything in the name of science, managed to grab some sperm and an egg from Utsuru and Yume and impregnated herself with their baby-making stuff. And now she's pregnant with a monster baby.
Wait, wait.
Yep.
So she took sperm
from a brother. Yep, from a brother and sister, and she put it up her snatch, and she is pregnant with a demon baby. That most likely has regenerative powers.
So again, I'm going with disgusting.
Oh my god, it is a mind.
That's just disgusting. Why? How did you make it 8 episodes in?
Well, because they're only 4 minutes long. And it seems like it's a great character study for the development of the siblings. And mind you,
it does.
For me, anyway. And I mean, I don't know how the father and mother are really going to play out, because I know they're going to show up in the anime series. And I want to see where this goes. This, I feel, is better than Diabolic Lovers. I would watch this several times over watching Diabolic Lovers once. And I did that for you guys. I hope you're happy.
No, you didn't. You did it for yourself, because you like to torture yourself with series sometimes.
I just like hearing somebody call a girl a bitch all the time, and I'm being sarcastic.
That's why you liked Inuyasha.
Well, I didn't realize he was calling her bitch until way later. But I was like, oh. But anyway, so if you're in for intense horror and you want to be disgusted with yourself and the medium, then you should check out Pupa. Like I said, it's totally available on Crunchyroll. It is not on Hulu Plus for a very good reason. And I don't have Netflix anymore, and they haven't updated their lineup on anime and Netflix for like several years now, so I doubt you'll see it there. And yeah, that's what I've been digesting this week.
Oh, I saw what you did there, and I really wish I had.
Num, 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 num. Eating siblings.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Of all the series that are new right now on Crunchyroll, what made you pick this one?
Well, because I was interested. Because
there are a bunch of 4 or 5 minute short, you know, hyper shortened series that are running.
To be 100% honest with you, it was really kind of a crapshoot, because I was watching a series that we talked about several weeks ago, you know, recently, My Sister is Unusual. Mm-hmm. And I decided to play the shift to the right 3 times. So you move 3 pictures over from wherever you were.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I've been testing out animes. And I did this one day, and Pupa happened to be the 3rd one to the right. So I was like, let me watch this first episode and see how I feel. And because it was only 3 minutes long, I was like, well, that's not enough. Episode 2, that's still not enough. And then I got to episode 5 and I said, oh, ew, eating a burger. Why am I so hungry? It was one of those.
Ew, ew. It made you hungry?
It made me eerily hungry for meat.
Now, as far as, like, the visual, I know it's hyper-shortened, but as far as the visual goes, like, how would you rank it as far as, like, creepy and eerie and visceralness between something like Another versus Dusk Maiden?
That's really funny that you'd say that. So between those two, I feel like Pupa probably sits, let me see, if we're going to go by a range, are we saying that Dusk Maiden is more suspense creepy and Another's like gore suspense creepy?
Yes.
Is that the scale?
Yes.
All right, then I would say that Pupa sits...
Gore versus mental.
I would say that Pupa sits closer to Dusk Maiden than Another.
Really?
Only because a lot of the gore that they're showing, and I'm using air quotes when I say showing in Pupa, a lot of it is, like, that blurred line like they do, like, in My Sister's Unusual, where, like, when they're showing something graphic, they have something slightly covering or some kind of light border.
Mm-hmm.
So you're hearing the sounds of, like, the intestines being ripped out and the munching, but you don't physically see her eating it, whereas in Another, literally, a chick falls down the stairs and you see her get impaled with her umbrella. Or you see a dude, you know, get his, like, limbs chopped off in Another.
And you know they're doing another two.
Yes. And that's going to get even fuckier than the first one. So I would say just on graphic alone and what they're what they're aiming to show us now in terms of gore in Pupa. It sits closer to Dust Maiden because they don't give you enough. I mean, at least in Dust Maiden, you had a full episode. You got full establishments of characters. You started to get motives established. But with this short set of shortened episodes, you really do not get a sense of who Utsuru is.
So let me ask you a question.
And vice
versa. Do you think that these hyper shortened series are more so designed to get you interested in these characters and what's going on and maybe entice you to read the manga
based
off of?
I would say that.
So do you think that it's kind of a reverse flow to try and drive people back to the manga as opposed to the manga driving people to the anime?
Well, I mean, I feel, especially in Pupa's case where there's 5 full volumes that probably are a lot more detailed, obviously because of the medium, that it makes me very curious to see what happens in the manga, to see what they were able to translate into the medium of anime. So it makes me interested as an anime lover and manga lover, yes. However, for someone who doesn't want to go through all that, I feel like these hyper short session anime episodes really allow a watcher or observer to make inferences that may or may not be answered in the next 3 or 4 minutes in the next episode. So these are short bursts to make your brain do some exercises that may or may not be beneficial by the end of the experience.
See, I just can't find a hyper-shortened series that piques my interest at all. Like, I tried to watch Hitalia and enjoy it, and I
can't. Oh my god, I loved Hitalia! And it had history!
No, it didn't have history. It made jokes. And
pasta!
Not. It didn't have history. It made stereotypes.
Pasta!
And
it was racist.
Ridiculously racist.
It was so racist, it was funny.
But it was so fast that, you know, and I'm a fast person, I could keep up with the jokes, but because it went so fast, I didn't get a chance to let it sit there. And
did you ever get to the second season of Italia?
No, because I couldn't make it through the first one because I was like, really?
You know, the first season is like under 30 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. I couldn't do it because there are, like, 3-minute episodes, and it basically is just, like, stereotype joke and smile, we're gone, bye, pasta!
It's like, no one really wanted to tell you. Germany, nobody likes me. I loved Italia.
But you are short attention span theater. I am not.
I love all theater.
Yes, but your generation is all about short attention span.
That's not true. Hey, look, a pony! Bad joke. But needless to say, it appeals to me. And I have yet to stumble onto anybody else who seems to get engrossed in short seasons, in short episodes like I have. So if you're out there, please have this discussion with me, because every time I bring up one of these episodes, one of these series, everyone's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm still watching Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood because it's based on the manga. I'm like, well, no shit, Sherlock. That's why they redid it.
I'm still waiting for the rest of Helsing Ultimate.
Keep waiting.
Yeah, that's what pretty much everyone keeps saying.
Keep waiting. You'll see all of Archer Vice and Chosen before you even see a thread on a Reddit somewhere.
I'm going to be retired before Helsing Ultimate actually gets finished.
Actually, you might see Helsing Ultimate abridged before you see all of Helsing.
I've been waiting for 8 for like a year. I don't understand why this bricked all of a sudden.
You're going to see all of Attack on Titan live action before you
see
Helsing Ultimate.
All of Attack on Titan live action, the series and movie.
And the light novel.
Plus probably a Voltron movie.
And a Wonder Woman movie.
A Wonder Woman movie.
Before you hear anything about
Helsing Ultimate. Because Gal Gadot signed on for it, which I absolutely love. Before I see Helsing Ultimate actually finish.
See it finish itself.
That's just so fucking sad to me.
You'll see Will Smith reprise his role as Will from Fresh Prince in an all-black version of Black Butler. Before you will see
I don't
Helsing
understand
Ultimate.
What Will Smith as Will from Fresh Prince in
like,
Black Butler?
It will be Will Smith reprising himself as Will, though he'll get adopted into the Phantom High family to do an all-black version of the Black Butler with Jeffrey the Black
Butler.
As yes.
Okay, So I would almost watch that.
I would watch that.
Before watching Hitalia.
And then the second season, what's his name? Carlton will be the antagonist from season two.
Okay, I would now watch that. I would now watch
it
that.
Would so happen.
Because I love Black Butler. I think that it's
probably... Oh my
probably,
god, that was sex
it, it
for
was
me.
It was a stellar series. And
I have a thing about posh little boys in
well
gear,
you know, and both oh, the sub yeah. and the dub, which very rarely mm-hmm. happens that a dub has a very good voice cast that lives up to.
I still like sub over dub. Dub wasn't bad,
but it was a really good dub. Like, you know, Phantom Hive still had the gravitas, which yeah. without it, it doesn't work.
It would flop like a pancake.
And it was there.
Like a waffle.
So I'm with you. I prefer for Black Butler the sub over the dub. But if you can't find a sub, the dub isn't bad.
Delicious. Anyway, I need to stop talking about this series because it's one of my favorites.
All right, are you having a recently My Sister is Unusual moment?
Yes.
In your
Black Butler is my sexy-ish.
Wow.
Yep.
Good to know that.
If I like 2D boys... That's the series I go to first.
So that's the okay.
Mm-hmm. That's in my spank bank.
Wow, really?
I'll admit it. I ain't ashamed. I'm a grown ass woman. I can do with what I want.
Who likes to have in her spank bank an underage cartoon boy?
He's 2D and not real. It's not illegal.
Do you have a pillow of him that I should know about?
Nope. I don't believe in love pillows.
They believe in you.
They want my money, and I'm not giving it
to
them. Just
saying, Panda.
All I need is my imagination.
Something like that. Well, we're coming up on time, so I'm going to hold my anime until next week. But it's also a series that's available on Crunchyroll. It's also available on Funimation Streaming Network. So I've actually been watching it on Funimation and Crunchyroll, because on Funimation I can listen to the dub version compare it to the sub version on Crunchyroll, and that's been a little bit of an experiment. So I'll share that with you guys next week, which you will find our podcast on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can also get the podcast in your iTunes application on your iOS device, either via the podcast application on your mobile, in the iTunes music store by searching for Electric Sisterhood and hitting subscribe, in the Microsoft store by searching for us, as well as on Stitcher, again, searching for Electric Sisterhood and subscribing to make sure you get brand new episodes the moment that we put them out on the web. You can check out all of our written reviews on our website, www.egmnow.com/Electric Sisterhood. The whole team writes articles and reviews there, so make sure that you go check out our page, like our content, share it with everybody you know, and comment. Let us know what you think. If you've got questions, we've got answers. And one of those places you can hit us up is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Land of Ash, where you'll find posts that we share, that we write, including our podcasts, other team members' questions, and just weird random ass shit that we find enjoyable on the internet that we think you'll find enjoyable on the internet. If you got any kind of question or concern, or you just want to say like, whoop, you can also hit us up on Twitter, twitter.com/@ESH News. I should say twitter.com/ESH News. You can hit us up on Twitter @ESH News, mention us, get us a question, answer our S question of the week, which Penda,
last week it was, what class you playing in Titanfall? And apparently everyone's too busy playing Titanfall to answer my question.
There was a lot of Titanfall playing.
There was a lot, and that's okay.
Because the beta was going to close. So.
I'm not mad at you. I understand. So, however, really.
What class did you play?
I played the Assassin class.
Me too. Assassin is the bomb.
I had the most fun in that, and I like wall running. I really just ran everywhere until
you
I got
like,
shot.
Parkour.
I was like, I'm gonna jump from this. Oh, you shot me in the face again?
I get sniped a lot.
Sniping's awesome.
Sniping is awesome, but I find that snipers go after me a lot.
But anyway, my question of this week is a little heady, because it has to do with the whole irrational, you know, breakdown and stuff like that.
It's gotta fit in 140 characters, Panda. Yeah. And people gotta be able to answer.
Well, but it was a really heady question, and I like it. And I just want to know, What element of irrational games would you like to see in a different death house, since we're going to see them all spreading out everywhere? What would you like to see in a different developer's game that we know is signature to Irrational? I think that can be answered in 140 characters.
Can you ask it in 140 and include the hashtag?
What do you like? Nope.
Yeah, why don't you work on it?
I will. We'll but anyway, favorite UI from Irrational in other games? It's something like that, but
okay.
That's what I want to know, because they have a lot of great things going for them in terms of games, and I'd like to see some of them get implemented into other games that I feel would make them better. So I'd like to know what you guys think about that. I want to have this conversation with you.
And where can they have the conversation?
They can have it with us on our Facebook page or on Twitter. We're using the hashtag #EshQuestion. I will see it. I will gather them, and I will speak about them next week or over on the VOG network, because when you're over at VOG, you're participating.
You
are participating with the VOG network, and we participate with the VOG network. So we're all participating together, and you can leave your comments there on the post of our episode that airs on Tuesdays over there. And like I said, so Twitter, VOG network, and our Facebook page, Land of Esh. Three ways to get it to me before Saturday of next week.
And we'll share them on the show, including your mentioning your name, and we'll talk about it, chat about it. No big whoop. It's kind of a big whoop, so you should do it. Additionally, while we put out brand new episodes of our podcast at the beginning of the week, the other team members from the Land of Esh also put out shows weekly, and you better check them out, because we said so. On Tuesday's brand new episode of No Borders, No Race,
I'm on it this week.
By our homeboy, King Baby Duck. And like Panda said, she's going to be on the show this week, along with our friend, the DCD. So you definitely want to check
George out... The George Clooney of video games.
You definitely want to check that one out. On Wednesday, more banging beats for your ear. A brand new episode of Geek Aggro, hosted by Deuces Wild, EDM Trap Music. It's going down. I'm telling you, it is an enjoyable, enjoyable show. If you need a little... for your week, that's where you want to be. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues,
y'all can have issues together. The brand new Issues Guys program, call in live. Fetch, share what's going on. You got something that's burning a hole in your pocket, in your brain case? Share it with the Issues Guy.
It's cheaper than therapy.
It really is. And for the rest of your Nerd Week, like Panda said, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. Make sure that you add us, you follow us, you share with us, match with us. We have a good time. It's good stuff. You know what else is good, Chef?
What?
Shit you dig.
Oh.
What shit you digging, Panda?
I'm digging Nugget this week. That's Esh Dog the pup.
It's kind of hard not to dig my little dog.
She's so cute until she bites your finger. And even after she's bitten your finger, she's still very cute. I would say her the most. I dig her the most this week.
That's good.
What are you digging this week?
I'm digging Girl Scout cookies.
You should just dig those year-round.
I mean, if I could get them year-round, I would. But seriously,
you gotta get the hookup.
Thin Mint. That's where it's at.
That, and you need to hide them like a secret like me. You guys didn't know I had them for weeks.
And with that little nugget... I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we're out until next week, guys.
You guys have a great time.